We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
And a pleasant good afternoon to everyone out there in Irish Breakdown land. I am Vince Tedario. I am the football analyst here at IrishBreakdown.com. That guy is Brian Driscoll. He's the publisher at IrishBreakdown.com. And it's Friday. It's the best day of the week. Mm-hmm. And it's also draft weekend, which is pretty fun and exciting too.
That's why we had two shows today. This is our second show of the day.
That's right. Brian's like, hey, did you know we had a show today? No, that was awesome. Yeah. I'm going to go back and watch
it. I was actually kind of proud of you that you didn't know, because that means you weren't on Twitter today. It means you were actually teaching your students.
Yes, and, I was,
you
know, actually. Doing and, all that and writing out a lineup card, and you know, it was too.
We appreciate it.
Yeah, so, but anyway, it is the Friday free-for-all mailbag, which means you out there in Irish Breakdown land get to dictate what we talk about today, and I'm fired up. We got all kinds of different questions already in the queue. Not surprisingly, from John A1, he is our guy and just loads us up with the questions. And
which is good, because it takes a while sometimes for people to kind of get rocking and rolling with the questions. And
it absolutely does.
This way, John gets us rocking and rolling, and they're always great questions. So let's just go ahead and dive right into it, Vince.
I'm very impressed, by the way, of John and his questions and what he's able to come up with each and every week. But his first one out of the box: if Braylon James reclassifies to the 22 class, who would be the ideal 23 wide receiver class for Notre Dame?
All right. So first of all, I still want us to pump the brakes just a little bit. There's a lot that has to happen.
Nothing's changed, right? That we know of. Yeah.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think Braylon would like to reclassify. There's at least an initial conversation happening. I think we're still a little ways of working out all the details. Having said that, just in this hypothetical situation,
right?
The thing is, it doesn't change the 23 class. Like, if you were going to take five receivers in 23, you're not going to take five still.
Yeah, right.
Because the point is, you have numbers need a receiver on your roster that this 23 class will address. You will then have an 85-man scholarship limit that this class would address. Braylon James jumping up a year wouldn't affect either one of those. It just move it. Because here's the thing. You need, let's say the number we view, Vince, of just pure receivers is four.
Right.
Right? That's because they only signed one receiver last year, only had, you know, you had three the year before that, and then the year before that, there's none left on the roster from the year before that, a receiver roster.
Right.
Right. So if you signed two last year, like if, let's say C.J. Williams would have signed last year, your need's not four anymore. It's three, and then the fourth is a swing guy as opposed to now being the fifth guy. So same thing. If Braylon James reclassifies to 2022, then your need is really only three, right? And then a fourth guy that could – you know, you could still take four, just like we said they could take five if the right guys want to come. But it doesn't change your need. It just moves it from one class to the next.
Right.
But as far as the ideal 23 receiver class, I mean, look, there's two guys for sure that Notre Dame wants in the class that right now are still legitimate targets. Like, look, we talked about this the other day. They're not going to stop recruiting Cardinal Tate, right? Tommy Reese is going down to see him today. He's going down to see some other guys this week. So they're not going to stop recruiting him, nor should they.
Yeah, no, but they absolutely.
They understand where they are with him. Two guys they definitely want in this class, for sure, that are, well, there's really three. They want Jaden Greathouse, they want Rodney Gallagher, and they want Ronan Hanifin. They definitely right. want those guys for sure. Now, there's right. other guys on the board like Malik Elzey and Tyler Williams, but again, I'll believe Tyler Williams is a legitimate option when he visits, right? When he gets on campus, I'll believe it. But until then, I think that's the target now that Braylon's in the class. That's the objective. And then, of course, a guy like Micah Tees may get a shot there. Just depends on, you know, Vince, whether or not he's willing to try offense, but then be willing to move to defense, or if he's just dead set on being an offensive player, does he want right. to stay on defense? There's a lot of moving parts on that one, but he's another potential guy that could be okay. an offensive player. So I think that is Greathouse, Gallagher, Hanifin is right now I think the ideal for them of targets that we view as being realistic targets at this point in time.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
John is going flipping over to the other side of the ball. Can Prince Kali still play Rover? Watching him play, he has excellent coverage skills, but is a bit undersized at the Will middle linebacker spots.
I don't think he's all that undersized, to be honest with you. Again, it's a different era, different time. I mean, I think he's close to 330 now. He's a little bit lean, but if you see Prince up close, Vince, and I think you've seen him at the practices, he's a pretty thick upper body kid.
Yes.
I mean, he's right now, I would say, thicker than what JD Bertrand and Drew White were last year, just upper body muscular. So I don't necessarily agree with the premise, John. Could he still play Rover? Potentially. I don't think the issue at Rover was, I don't think he was super comfortable in space.
Yeah.
I think that's more the issue. Athletically, he can play it, and body type is, you know, good. He's got that length that you really want there and all that. But I don't know if it's a situation where he was comfortable playing in space. Like, you can be good in coverage, but not necessarily be really comfortable in space. And I think that was more of the issue for Prince. So I think Will linebacker is a place where he's kind of feels really comfortable. Now, I wouldn't be opposed to giving him another shot at Rover, but right now I don't think that need is there. You've got Jack Kaiser, the returning starter. Jack had a good spring game. I thought he played well, overlooked because of how well other guys played, but Jack was good in that game. You got Jordan Patejo doing some really good things.
Right.
Arguably your best signee in the 2022 class is playing Rover right now in Jalen Snead. So I don't think there's a need there for him.
Right.
Now, you could potentially say, okay, flip Patejo and Prince Kali. And I mean, I think that would be a different conversation, but I think they like Patejo as an edge guy, whether it's as a Rover edge or as a Viper edge. I don't know if they love him as much coming inside, where the discipline aspect is a little bit more.
That makes a lot of sense.
A little bit more key to that.
Right. You can be a little bit more freewheeling when you're out in space as opposed to when you're in the box.
And I did want to say something, Vince. We did not take any draft questions, right? Because we knew we were on a limited time. If you all want to talk about the draft, even if it's not necessarily about Notre Dame, and Ryan will be here in about 5 to 10 minutes. If you guys want to ask us about our draft impressions or opinions, feel free to do that too. Like, it doesn't just have to be Notre Dame per se. Obviously, we can do that, but I just want to make sure people understand it, because we didn't take questions in the. I mean, if you can ask questions about like history, then we should be able to talk about the NFL draft. So, want to just make sure people know that we're open.
So you guys didn't take questions in the first show.
Well, we were working on a limited time
because
we had that window between, and I had to grab some lunch, and he had an interview he had to do draft. So we were like, look,
that makes sense.
Just we're going to do the show, and if you have questions, hang on to them. But I want people to if you had an NFL draft question that we didn't get to in the first show, feel free to throw that in.
Yeah, it's a free-for-all, baby. Okay. Tommy Guns, do you think Austin would be a good complement for Tennessee with the Arkansas receiver?
Well, that's a good one, Vince. I actually think Tennessee would be a great place for him to go.
Okay.
I really respect that coaching staff. I think Mike Vrabel is a big believer in playing the game the right way and fundamentals and all that. From what I watch of them, like again, Vrabel, I don't watch on the NFL. But I think that's the kind of play, toughness, you know, discipline. That's something that Kevin Austin needs.
Yep.
So I think that'd be a great fit for him just as a human being, as a compliment to Treylon Burks. Yeah, I think so. Treylon is kind of a big possession type of guy that has great ball skills. Ryan likes his long speed. He talks about what he did. I don't love his long speed as much. I think separation is always going to be a little bit of an issue for Treylon Burks, but I think he's so physical and has great hands and, you know, and all that, that I think he'll make up for it, you know, in a lot of ways. He reminds me kind of a lot of like Michael Floyd coming out, right? I think Kevin, more of a speed guy, a little bit more raw technically. Kevin is a guy that I think could create more separation once he learns how to play the position. So, and again, it's building off of a team that's a running team. And so you get this 6'2", 210-pound, you know, Kevin Austin working off the play actions and things like that. Yeah, I could see that being a good fit.
I would say I like Tennessee, and I will echo everything that you said about Coach Vrabel. I don't know what the coaching staff looks like individually from the wide receiver coaching standpoint. He needs to go to somebody who's going to stress the fundamentals, not just the guy who's going to throw the plays up there and make sure they got them memorized. You know what I mean? Because there are those guys in the NFL, right? Because they expect that by the time you're in the NFL, you should have the fundamentals down. And that's not an expectation that they shouldn't have. Kevin needs to go someplace where he's going to get taught. And if they have a wide receiver coach who does that well, and I'm pleading ignorance here, I don't know what they have on their staff, but if they have that, then that would increase my level of, that's a great place for him to go. So I do want to say that. John says, could Kyle Hamilton be the first of three consecutive Notre Dame safeties taken in the first round of the NFL draft?
So I am sure of the first two.
I don't know who the third one is.
Is he thinking Ramon Henderson? Is that who you're, John? I'd like to, if you don't mind, I'll go down there and wait for his answer, Vince. But I'm really curious who the third. I would think maybe he's thinking Ramon Henderson.
Okay.
If that's the case, I'm not going there. Not even close. Now, first of two, potentially, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
I could see Brandon. The thing with Brandon Joseph is, how's he going to test?
Sure.
Right. So you got Kyle number one. You got Brandon potentially coming out this year. It's not given that he said Henderson or Watts. And so it's not a given that Brandon Joseph's going to come out this year. But if he has a great year and he plays like a first rounder, then he'll come out and be a first rounder.
Right.
So I could definitely see two. I'm not ready to go there for
the third one's tough for me too.
Right. Because he's three in a row. Like somebody was said, you know, maybe thinking Caleb Downs for the third. And I think he means three drafts in a row.
Yeah, but three drafts in a row is referring to.
I don't see Ramon Henderson or Xavier Watts as being first round picks right now. And look, they're athletic and everything, but they're a long way away as players from being first round picks.
Absolutely agree.
So I am definitely not there at this particular time in regards to viewing those guys as first round picks.
Yep. John has an interesting question here, and I know you've seen Draft Day, the movie, right, Brian?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. He says, what's the weirdest test you have heard a draftee take part in? For example, the Draft Day and the $100 bill in the playbook, where they taped a $100 bill to the last page of the playbook or whatever.
Brian Drew had the best response. He sent it back in a card and said, wait till I win you a Super Bowl.
He's the guy you want.
Yeah. It's kind of funny. I was trying to remember which NFL team it was last night, but there was talk about, I'm going to have to pull up my draft sheet, but I'm sorry to interrupt real quick, but I'm trying to think of what team it was that they were thinking about drafting a quarterback, and then they ended up not drafting a quarterback. I was trying to remember who it was. And I just got this thought of like their quarterback, their current quarterback being like Brian Drew, like shaking his daughter, like he's going to snap her. Yes. You know, and they didn't draft Bo.
The Saints?
It wasn't the Saints. I'm trying to see who it was. Trying to go through this. It wasn't Washington.
Jameis Winston.
It might have been the Saints. Yeah, but it's just kind of funny. I was just thinking about that. Like, you know, I just kind of got a good kick out of that.
But I will say, if you're an NFL player, like on a team, on a roster, how do they watch the draft? You know what I mean? Like, are you watching like, oh crap, that's my replacement?
It was Jared Goff.
For Detroit.
With the 12th pick, yeah.
Right. Yeah. Like, do you sit there and you're just like, oh boy. You know, I've always wondered that. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, you're sitting there watching your replacement get drafted and you're like, oh boy, okay.
Yeah. Forget coach. Compete with him. So, anyway, as far as the weirdest test, that's probably a better question for Ryan Roberts whenever he decides to grace us with his presence. He's down there now. Can you not add yourself, Ryan?
I'll add him.
Okay, there you go.
I'll just do it.
He was just down there listening, I mean, hanging out.
I mean, I can. I didn't want to interrupt a good conversation, though. I mean, I was being respectful.
Oh, I appreciate it. He's so nice.
He's so kind. Nice. So do you have one for this question, Ryan?
Weirdest test. Usually it's like it's some type of word association stuff, or it's something where like you give a guy a option, right? And I was told this one story by this scout this one time where he was an older scout and he basically had to reprimand a younger scout because the younger scout went into a visit at a school and said to the kid, if you had to kill someone, which weapon would you choose? And he's like, buddy, we're not doing that. We're leaving right now. So there are some weird macho scouts out there, man, that are like, oh, we're tough. We're going to kill things and we're going to do all that type of stuff. So it's bizarre, man. Some of these. Yeah.
I have met some scouts and they're either one of two ways. They're either really like thoughtful, like just intellectual, like talking about politics and all this other kind of stuff, or they're freaking meat wads who couldn't coach. Like there's like no middle of the road with scouts. Like it's just like it seems like it's like like if you were to have like a scouting convention, half the guys be over here in like this World War II symposium where they're talking the impact of, you know, the petroleum trade on Japan's decision to, you know, attack the United States, and then the other half are over here just like looking like Idiocracy, you know, just down there pegging beers and like
just having arm wrestling contests and stuff.
Yeah. Like that's how I view scouts, right? Like in my, just from the guys I've met, it's like one of those two camps.
So. Do you guys want another one real quick? Vince, this one's for you. Ready?
Okay.
Vince, if you had to run into a burning building and you can only take, I'm sorry, let me rephrase. Let me back it up. Your house is on fire and you can only run into your house and save one item. What would it be and why?
One item, so not a human being.
Not a human. Everybody's out. Everybody's safe.
Okay, everybody's out. It'd probably be my wedding album.
And why?
Because
he wants to stay married.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. He doesn't want.
That's right.
He doesn't back want then, I don't know if he has left over to be taken.
I'm not 100% sure it was all digital back then. So yeah. Those pictures may be the only copies. You know what I mean? So that's what I would grab.
I got to grab my moneymaker, man. I got to grab my computer. That's
a good point.
That's true.
We had to the school, so get a new one.
We had Chris Oladokun on, who's a quarterback from South Dakota State, and he said that his iPhone charger would be the one that he would take out because his iPhone's always in his pocket, so he'd have to get his iPhone, but he needs his iPhone charger to call for help. I'm like, that's all right.
Hey.
Makes sense.
Well, I'm going to call for help after I charge my phone.
Yeah, or just go to CVS and get a new one.
What if it was dead, Brian? What if it was dead?
Go to the freaking neighbor. Ask them to use your phone. Like, what? I'm gonna call 911 as soon as my phone charges. Like, what?
If that was the case, I would just grab the basket with all the cables in it at my house. You know what I mean? As opposed to just the one.
I did want to ask Ryan this real quick question because we were the answer is whatever my wife tells me to grab. That's but that's why Vince already answered that question. He knows what the missus is gonna tell him to grab. Look at the wedding album.
Or the dog. I mean, the dog would be a big one, obviously.
But that's not an item.
Okay, fair enough.
Right? Like
yeah.
Yeah.
She would make sure the dog was secure before anybody else, I guess, in our house.
I did want to ask him the John A1's safeties question.
Yeah.
I know you were listening to the discussion, Ryan, and then he said he's thinking either Henderson or Watts. Your response to this, because obviously the first two are obvious, Kyle and Brandon Joseph.
Right.
But
yeah,
thoughts on I know you love Brandon Joseph, but then thoughts on the third one.
Yeah, I mean, I think Brandon can eventually be that type of guy, because also I think next year's draft is just going to be a lot less populated. Like, there's just going to be less numbers next year, so I think that offers more opportunity. And you know, I'm a big fan of Brandon Joseph. If he plays the way he did in 2020, this full year for Notre Dame, then he's a first round caliber player.
Enjoy him for a year.
Yeah,
but yeah, hey, exactly.
I will 100% enjoy it for a year, and I'll be completely, and I would cheer him on as he goes to the NFL. But I mean, it's way too early for Ramon Henderson. I like Ramon for what he is, right? Like, he's got some range on the back end. He's a really athletic kid, but he's barely played safety. Like, I need to see a lot more.
I'm gonna see if he's an athletic football player. Like, he showed flashes last year, but he also looked really bad in the blue gold game. And I didn't hear much from him during the spring this year.
I mean,
that's true. It's a good point. It's not a given. And Xavier Watts, I mean, I definitely not going there. I mean, everybody knows I love Xavier Watts, but I mean, I got to see him actually win a starting job or number two job first.
Right. Exactly. Yep.
Here's one.
John says, do you suspect Notre Dame will be a variable front defense in 22? And do you want Notre Dame to be a multi-front defense? Variable front and multi-front are the same thing, right?
So I take them as the same thing.
Are they saying variable as in there's different techniques up front, and then multi is the three or four? I don't know if that's – yeah, I don't know.
John's really a smart guy. He's a lot smarter than I am. So he's like – you know, he may be talking about that. For me, my thing is you're going to see multiple fronts. You're going to see different personnel groupings.
Right.
You're going to see both of those, right? And I want both – but to me, that's all multiple.
Right.
Like, a multiple front's not under one snap, over the next snap. I mean, that's not multiple for me, right? Multiple is you're under one snap, you're over the next snap, you're in basically a double eagle the next snap, you're in an odd front the next snap. Like, that's multiple. And then also within that, the personnel changes. So that's kind of how I view that one, Vince.
It's just yes along the whole line. Yeah. But Charlie White,
you have to be, I think, in today's era.
I agree. Yeah, because there's just too many smart guys and there's too many ways to defeat.
The only George is not overly multiple, but that's because, again, as we saw last night, they had, you know, five first round draft picks, and then three other guys in their defense that are going to go in round two. Like, you can just out talent people to a degree. And let's be honest, they only won the national championship because Bama lost their top two wide receivers.
That's a very good point.
You know, but the reason why is because when they play Bama, because Bama has dynamic athletes that can match them, they're able to score on them where nobody else has the athletes to match them, right? And that's the point that I'm making. Like, even then, there's limitations to it, because you look what Bama did when they had even remote – I mean, they had their full arsenal in that game, and they ripped Georgia apart with their pass game.
Right.
Because they just line up and they do what they do. And Bama was able to pick it apart. But by the time you got to the middle of the second quarter in the championship game, there's no John Metchie, there's no Jameson Williams.
Right.
And so, you know,
they just pack up the box and go to town. I mean, that's
right.
Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly.
Charlie Weiss's last belt loop with the super chat. Thank you very much. He says, nothing to say. Just want to show my love to IB. Have a good weekend, everyone. IB is hands down the best source for Fighting Irish intel. I mean, I'm biased, but I agree. So thank you very much for that.
We're all kind of biased, but I think we would all agree.
Yeah. I mean, you know.
And I think the thing that I like is a lot of the people that are on our site would agree with that too.
Yes. Which is no question.
Is why we keep growing and growing and growing and growing.
People always come to me and they're like, well, I heard this from another site, but I want to hear what you guys have to say just to make sure it's true. Like, that's pretty much how
I like that. I dig that.
Right. Kevin Horton with the super chat. Thank you very much, Kevin. Some quick research in the top 25 NFL safeties had one, Fitzpatrick, who was drafted higher than Kyle, 11th. Most were 2 to 3. Thoughts?
I mean, that's why Kyle fell to 14, right? It's because safeties are undervalued for the most part. I mean, the guys that have been drafted high recently, I mean, I think like Jamal Adams was a top 10 pick. He didn't really, I mean, he's been a solid player in spurts, but he hasn't been a great player, I mean, at all. And Derwin James was a mid-first-round pick. I think he was like 17 or something. He's a good football player. But, yeah, I mean, your point is valid, Kevin. It's Jesse Bates was a second-round pick. Marcus Williams was a day-two pick. I think he was second or third round. So have guys that are, you know, all over the place. But yeah, it's for the most part. Yeah, you're absolutely correct. His guys are more day two players just because I think it's the value of the safety position. Honestly, it's just what it typically tends to be.
I think that's going to change in the next decade. And here's why I think that's going to eventually change, because I think it's all cyclical, right? As the game evolves, defenses tend to be like behind in regards to personnel.
Sure.
Because kids grow up and they want to play this or they want to play that, and they want to be corners or they want to be receivers or whatever, because, you know, it's like somebody tweeted, I think it was a Don Shuler last night after the first five picks. He's like, defense is where the money's at, right? Like, well, for a while there, it's like receivers where the money's at. So you get into that whole thing. But I think what you're going to find is you're going to find more and more teams are going to start putting some of these 6'3" rangy kids that are two-way players in high school that right now are going receiver. Eventually, you're going to start playing some defense.
Sure.
And some of these bigger corners are going to start, you know, and I think eventually you're going to start seeing, because of, as defenses figure out, the best way to counter the modern offense is not with more linebackers. Eventually, you're going to start seeing some of these athletes that weren't playing in the secondary before start playing in the secondary, at least safety. And now you're going to say, hey, look, you know, we go with this three safety look, and so I'm not saying they're going to be a bunch of top five picks, but I do think at some point in time that position is going to be revalued in a way that running back won't be. You know, I don't think running back's going to all of a sudden go back to the days where you were taking right. a bunch of running backs in the top 5 to 10. I do think safety eventually is going to be, because as there are more Kyle Hamiltons and Jeremiah Wusukoramoas and Isaiah Simmonses, as college teams start to try to attack the offenses that are coming to college, you're going to see more options where there's going to be more Kyle Hamiltons. And then also part of it is if guys like Wusukoramoas and Kyle Hamilton and to a degree Isaiah Simmons can start having more success and being impact players,
right?
Then people say, hey, I want the next that guy. You know, but I was actually, I mean, if you look at it, there were three safeties taken in the first round last night. I mean, that's not bad.
Right.
You know? And, well, and whereas how many running backs were taken in the first round last
night? Well, and a lot of that, I think, also has to do with the fact that, you know, the way offenses are, it's a pass happy league now. I mean, and like you said, running backs are undervalued or devalued because they're just not used as much. And you can almost plug and play a lot of different running backs into these offensive systems that NFL teams are running. And if I'm an NFL team and I know that these teams are going to be throwing the ball all over the place, well, how do you combat that? Get a safety that can play on, you know, two different levels and can come downhill and can do all these different things, a la Kyle Hamilton, right? So I think that you're right. I think it's going to be – there's going to be more value in the secondary because of the evolution of these offenses and what they're doing too.
Yeah.
So, you know, pass rushers and safeties, like that's – and corners, those are the guys you're going to need.
Now, again, is there ever going to be a year where there's a run on safeties like we saw and run on receivers in the top 15 last night? I'm not saying that.
Right.
I'm not saying that. I'm just saying like a Kyle Hamilton said going fourth will go fifth. Instead of three guys being taken in the first round, there's five, but they're still going to be second half of the draft guys is what I'm referring to. Like you're not going to see a safety get taken number one overall in 7 years.
Sure. Sure. Mm-hmm.
But I don't see running back changing.
No,
I don't really see that all of a sudden. You'll see a kid here and a kid there, but I just don't see running back the way the NFL is going. Plus, you know, again, running backs just have a different shelf life. And now let's be honest too. A lot of guys that were running backs 15 years ago are now first round getting drafted in the first round as linebackers. Mm-hmm. That's the other thing too.
That's a good point.
You know, I mean, that's just kind of how
the evolution.
That's what I'm saying, the cyclical part of it.
Yeah.
Right? This is what I'm referring to.
There's going to be a running back drafted quite high next year though. Bijan?
He could be a
that kid's the
no. That's
deal,
right.
Man.
Travion's not coming out. That's right.
That's 2 years from now. Yeah. Yeah. Next year's running back class is pretty nutty, man. You got Bijan, Jahmyr Gibbs, Tank Bigsby.
Jahmyr Gibbs is an interesting one to me.
He's like, fast, man. He's fast.
I think he's gone from undervalued to a little overvalued now. He's got to show me a little something at Bama this year, but he's going to have a chance because he's going to fit that offense pretty well.
Sure will.
Pretty well. Here we go. Here's another one from John A1.
All right. He says, does Notre Dame use tight end screens? I can't remember Mayer getting that kind of a target, even though I believe tight end screens suit guys like Tommy Tremble. Is that a wrinkle IB would want to see?
Well, let me address that one first. They used to run a decent amount of tight end screens.
Yes, they did.
And they would do that bootleg under screen where like the, you know, it looks like a slide route, but he's actually catching down the line and they're blocking down the field. they would do stuff like that. But the problem is last year, the offensive line was so bad. They were just terrible screen blockers.
Right.
I mean, you're going to get Kane Madden out in space and want him to go block a corner or safety. It just isn't happening. So that was more of Tommy Rees went away from that last year because of the fact that he just didn't. I mean, you got to know what you have.
Yep.
And I don't think that that was like, I don't know if Josh Lugg is someone I want. Like Josh Lugg as a guard with a guy like Blake Fisher, cool, I can dig that, right? But Josh Lugg, when he's your most athletic guy on the perimeter because you're running the screen to your right, no thanks.
Right, right.
So, but is it a wrinkle I'd like to see? Absolutely. Any way that you can get Michael Mayer the ball, and honestly, even if you just run a couple of them early, then that sets up things we can do off of them as teams start keying Michael Mayer. But the problem is early in the season, it's going to be a little challenging to do that because teams are going to be so locked in on Michael Mayer that, I mean, it's going to be hard to – like right. They tried to run a tight end screen to him in the blue gold game, and the defense ate it up and Maris picked it off. If you go back and watch the interception Maris had, that was a tight end screen. They faked the thing to the running back, and they actually had Mayer kind of come on behind it. Pretty decently well-designed play, but the defense sniffed it out because they'd probably seen it 10 times in practice.
Exactly. That's the other thing. Yeah.
Agreed. And they sniffed it out pretty good. So, yeah, I think we'll see. Ryan, I'm not sure what your thoughts are. I imagine we're on the same page on that one.
Yeah. No, I think it's situational, right? Like there's, you know, the what you have up front is very going to dictate your ability to run certain concepts, right? So I would love to see tight end screens. I would absolutely love it, but it's just, yeah, gotta have the Joes do it, right? Jimmy's in the Joes.
Right. And they have that. They have it up at tight end. And I think they'll have it at receiver this year.
Yeah. John has a bold prediction about Michael Mayer since we're talking about tight ends. He said, 85 receptions, 1,100 yards, 10 touchdowns. Am I crazy?
I don't want to comment if you're crazy or not, John. That's for other people to decide.
We have met you, right? John. We do not think you are. Ryan has not. Vince and I
have not met you.
You're not John, crazy.
I assume you're not crazy, though. I assume that you're not. I think that's just a little high, John, just a little bit. Like I think that he could have 800, 900 type, but like I expect – wide receivers to kind of take a step forward as far as like picking up a little bit of production. So I just, and it's going to be a heavy run offense, right? Like I think Tyler Buckner is going to have a decent amount of passing yards, but like I've been on the tune of like maybe 2,800 passing yards from Buckner. So like 1,100 out of 2,800, that's a very high percentage. So I'm going to say it's a little lower than that, but he's going to have an outstanding season if he stays healthy, obviously.
I would say it's possible. I mean, he's got the talent to do it. I think to Ryan's point, I don't know if they're going to throw it enough to where one individual guy is going to – like, I think they're going to throw it. I think 2,800 yards, I think they're going to – also, I think the backups are going to throw. I'm not going to be shocked if Tyler Buckner gets to 3,000 yards this year, just in 13 games. I'm not going to be shocked by it. But I think you're going to have, you know, 300-400 yards in the backup quarterbacks. But again, when that happens, that's not being thrown to Michael Mayer unless it's an injury-related situation. So I just think he would have to have so much production the second half of the year because early in the season, I have a hard time seeing him catching 100, you know, going for almost not 100 yards a game just because teams are going to be focused on him so much.
Well, and that's the key right there is the focus. I mean, right now, coming into the season, he's their best offensive player. So they're going to key on him. And so until somebody else steps up and says, hey, you got to think about me too, he's going to be the guy that they're keying on. And he's still going to get his receptions and his yards. I just don't know that it's going to be quite this high. And wasn't the number last year 10 touchdowns? And you're like, no, that's never going to happen. And he didn't really – what, he ended up with 7?
Yeah, because I had a bet with somebody said he was going to get to 10.
Right.
And I think he had like a couple in the first couple games, and he's like, I'm going to win the bet. And I was like, yeah, we'll see what happens when teams aren't keying on him.
Right. Well, I think it's going to be the opposite this year.
Yeah.
They're going to key on him early, and then assuming somebody steps up, which I think that they will, then they got to spread things out.
Well, we started to kind of see that a little bit late in the year last year, I thought.
Yeah.
I thought that, you know, kind of late in the years, we saw – Kevin Austin started to make more plays and the pass game started getting a little bit more spread around and the quarterback actually started having more time. You know, we saw Michael sort of step up with some big moments. And, you know, he got a little banged up last year too. We forget his 71 catches for 840 yards. That came with him missing the Virginia Tech game.
That's true.
And being banged up for a big chunk of the Cincinnati game. But if you look at his last four games, he had 7, 3, 9, and 7 catches, scored 4 touchdowns in the last four games. He had 84, 86, 105, and 72 yards. I mean, that puts him on a pace to be at 1,100 yards next year. I would say this. If he gets to have 1,100 yards, my bet would be, Ryan, that he does it on fewer than 85 catches. Because I think it has to be some more chunk plays because of the nature of the offense.
A little more of a seam runner next year. Yeah.
The part of that stat I could definitely see, though, I could see 85 catches because that's not a huge jump from this year. Like, if he catches 85 passes, I think it's going to be for less yards.
That's fair.
But the one that I see is the 10 touchdowns I could definitely see. Like, not last year. I didn't see it last year. I could definitely see it this year because you're going to have a quarterback that's going to be such a great red zone weapon.
Right.
That those linebackers and safeties have to get bite. Real peaky. Yeah.
They're going to bite.
And Ryan, that goes back to Ryan, what you were talking about on the show earlier. I think it was this week where we were talking about kind of projecting Tyler Buchner. It was that thing of you one of your bold predictions was he was going to have a mess of rushing touchdowns. Well, I think that's going to open up some opportunities where Michael Mayer is going to find himself running all alone in the end zone and Tyler's just going to flick it over his head.
Pretty good big target to be flipping to, you know what I mean? Like that's an okay situation.
But that's what an athlete like Tyler Buchner can do to you in the red zone. And that's interesting. I'm really curious to hear your guys' opinions on this next question. Isaiah Foskey is Notre Dame's most talented defensive lineman since.
Ooh,
Vince, you go first.
Oh, I knew you were going to do that.
I mean, there's kind of an easy answer for me, but I'm going to follow up with this depending on what your guys' answer is. You guys both still thinking?
Yeah, I'm going to
think for a second. The easy answer for me is he's their best defensive lineman since Stephon Tuitt.
Okay.
I mean, I think he's better than Julian Aguara. I think he's better than Khalid Kareem. I definitely think he's better than Jerry Tillery. Jerry Tillery had one great game in 2018. He was good the rest of the year, but he wasn't great the rest of the year. He just was a little bit, a unique unicorn athlete. I think he's their best defensive lineman, and he's better than Sheldon Day, even though Sheldon Day had a great 2015, better than Romeo Aguara, better than Isaac Rochelle. To me, he's their best defensive lineman since Stephon Tuitt, and I'm talking about the 2012 version of Stephon Tuitt.
That was 10 years ago, man.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
So that's my pick. What do you guys think? Would you guys want to make a case for Tillery or –
Tillery was the first one that came into my head, to be perfectly honest with you, just based on the production that he had. Yeah, I mean, that he was the first one to come into my head. I see where you're coming from with Tua. I'll stick with Tillery just to be different. But I because he's the first one that popped into my head. So I will stick with Tillery.
I was thinking Tillery, too, because it doesn't say who's the best defensive lineman since. It says who's the most talented. I mean, Jerry Tillery had some insane talent. I mean, he was long, sub-5, 40-yard dash. He was a really explosive kid for his size and really flexible. So I'll probably go with him, but too, it's a great answer. My problem was I started also just thinking about, like, pure edges, right? Like, I don't think of Tuitt as pure edge. No, Tillery obviously
more of
was
an
pure
edge. Tillery was, for sure.
Yeah, more of edge than Tillery. Yeah. But for some reason, like, Justin Tuck popped in my head, and that's where, like, my mind was going a little bit.
That was
going
to be my next question. Okay, so let's say that do you guys think that Isaiah Foskey, if he grows the way that you think you do you guys think he'll be better this year than Tillery or Tuitt
and Tuck?
Yes.
No. Tuitt and Tillery.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Then my question is then how far to go back, which Ryan, you answered. Tuck, and it's Justin Tuck.
Yeah. I don't know. And I don't think he surpasses Tuck.
Right. Well, see, I think he will because I don't think Justin Tuck, his game never got, like, Justin Tuck had a great, like, season at Notre Dame and the stats were there, but, like, he was still younger. There were parts of his game that were still evolving, which is
why he was
a second-round pick. Agree. I think if Justin Tuck would have come back for his senior year, this isn't even a conversation.
Right.
I think Justin Tuck would have been a super high pick if he'd have come back, assuming he had got coached up. Right?
Sure.
I think if Isaiah Foskey can put it together, there's no reason that he can't be Aiden Hutchinson next year. Like, perceived as Aiden Hutchinson. Sure. I think he could be a better prospect than
Aiden
Hutchinson.
He's more talented. I could see next year being exactly like this year's draft, Ryan, with two edge players going 1 and 2. Unless a quarterback emerges as a number one overall caliber guy, and right now I don't know who that would be. I could see, depending, of course, there's always the who has number 1 and 2, but it wouldn't shock me if next year, if we saw similar with Will Anderson going 1 and Isaiah Foskey going 2. It's a jump from where he is now, but he's got the talent to do so.
It's not outlandish.
Here's the other part of it. If Justin Tuck comes back, people got to remember that would have been 2005. He'd been part of a really good team, and he'd had this dude named Victor Abiemiri playing on the opposite side of him. As now a junior.
Yeah.
And that would have been a sick. I'll tell you this right now. Notre Dame beats USC in 05 if Justin Tuck comes back.
Completely agree.
No
with
way
that.
In heck that Matt Leinart has time to throw that football.
Yep, completely agree with that. I was so devastated when he left for the draft. Yeah. I really thought he needed to stick around. You know, that was at the very beginning of my coverage of the team, and I was devastated. I thought he really could have helped himself and the team, because I think the writing felt like it was on the wall to a degree that this team could be really good offensively, and the defense was like right there, and he just would kind of almost like the missing link, if you will, if he would have come back and he would have cemented
those two
himself.
Pass rushers with Derek Landry and Trevor Lawls up the middle.
Yeah.
That'd been one heck of a defensive line.
USC would have been in trouble.
Chris Strong got hurt, you're running the rest of the year with Ronald Talley.
True. Yeah. Right.
You know, which was not where you wanted to be.
Sure.
Not at all. There's three what ifs for me in regards to guys coming back during coaching transitions. Tuck is the first one. Jimmy Clausen's the second one. And I'll be honest, Kevin Austin's the third one for me.
Wow.
Because I look at what this offense could be next year. Like, we're talking about, like, you know, who's going to step up a W. Imagine having Kevin Austin in the boundary with Chancey Stuckey coaching him.
Yeah.
And you've got Stiles and Davis and all those guys in the field. That offense would be nasty.
I would love to get Kevin Austin in a room, just the two of us, and just be like, hey, do you really think you made the right decision here?
He'd say yes.
That's the issue.
That's the issue with Kevin, though, right?
Well, okay, that's fair.
He'd say yes.
That's fair. But like, his stock could have gone through the roof if he would have come back another year.
Right.
Just unbelievable. Could have been so good. But
agree.
We digress. Christopher Crosby says, join the message board last week. Welcome, Christopher. Welcome. Great community, great content. My question is, if we keep both safeties currently in the class, but miss on Caleb Downs, do we go after someone like King Mack or no?
I mean, it doesn't seem like they have that much interest in King Mack. So, I mean, that ship has seemed to sail. So, safeties, I mean, they were kicking the tires with Malik Hartford for a little bit out of Ohio. I don't know
but he's a hot, he's a top kid in my opinion. I don't know what you think of him, Ryan, but like,
yeah,
he's one of those, well, yeah, of course you got to recruit that guy. He's a top sure. recruit.
Sure.
I love King Mack, but I don't view him as that kind of guy.
No. King's more like a decent range, good IQ, but also I think he has like some slot upside too, you know, like he has a little bit of that look because he's a little bit undersized, right? Mm-hmm. But I honestly think that they would be okay with just taking two. But if they could get Caleb Downs, then yeah.
And I wonder if part of that, you know, you see how Justin Walters did, you know, I think there's other things that always factor into whether or not you're going to take a guy that kind of jumps up like that. But, and look, would they be open to a third guy? Yes, if a guy presented itself. But it doesn't seem to me, because if they were dead set on taking a third safety, there'd be other guys that they'd be pushing harder for right now. And like King Mack. And the fact that they're not recruiting King Mack tells me that it's kind of Caleb Downs or nothing. It was like Caleb Downs, then Malik Hartford, and then we're good with what we have. I also think that they're a little bit more sold on Peyton Bowen staying in the class now than they were a month ago.
Sure.
And I think that's a factor in this conversation as well.
John, going deep here, he says, what are your IB's spring grades for Marcus Freeman's new staff? Who's the assistant of the quarter?
I'll answer the second one. The first one, I think, is still incomplete. You know, I just think overall, I think the staffs both did well. I think the assistant of the quarter so far for me is Chancey Stuckey, just because he was the one that I had the biggest questions about.
Sure.
He's had success in the recruiting trail, right? Like, wasn't he the first of the new coaches to get on the board for the 23 class? Right? Like, I don't count.
The 23 class, because
Dylan McCullough got Jabron Payne. That's a little bit different because you got him to sign with you already once.
Right. Before. Yeah, he already recruited him.
A little different than, like, Chancey was recruiting the other kid at Baylor. It's not like he signed with you at Baylor, right? Like, it's a little different.
Right.
It doesn't take away from that being a good recruiting job. It's just a different scenario.
I get that.
But he was the guy that had the biggest question marks about, guys. I mean, and that's the thing, is we saw growth, but it's hard. I say that just because of expectations, but I loved what he standed with the line. You know, and Vince and I disagreed a little bit on that. I loved the growth from 1 to 15 from the line. I thought Al Washington did a great job with the D-line. But, again, he inherited a really good defensive line.
Sure.
You know, I think Al Golden's done a really good job, but, again, he's taken over for a really good defense. You know, Dylan McCullough's taken over a really good running back room. So he was, to me, it was going to come down to Harry or Chancey, because they were the ones that were coming in the situation where they actually had to significantly improve on what they inherited. So it's going to be one of those two guys. And, you know, I had this thing. Chancey was the bigger unknown for me.
I was hoping you'd go with Harry so I could go with Chancey, if I'm being honest. And mine would have been a little bit different reasoning, because I had no expectations on Chancey Stuckey. I had none, because I just didn't know that much about him. And I've coached wide receivers in the past, and I was a wide receiver. And so I am naturally
triple option offense. Hey,
whatever. It still said WR next to my name. Okay. But no, I am born naturally drawn to that position group. And so when I was at practice, I was right there while he was coaching these kids up. I was like, man, this guy can coach. Yeah. And it was really refreshing to hear the way he was coaching, and then also the way that the guys were listening and just soaking it all
and
up.
They're all like practice, because
Vince
was, they sent, you guys sent me, like, you guys recorded so we could cut up, but I got to watch it. But you guys just like let it roll during the receiver individual. So I got to listen to all of it. It's like he's hitting all the points. It's easily digestible. He's not talking just to talk. He's repeating the same thing over and over again, which is a really important key. Because like in spring practice, you're going to like, today my focus is going to be on this.
Right.
I'm really going to hammer them on this. I'm going to really focus on this. And you keep repeating, you beat it into their head.
Right.
And you can see the kids back there, like, you know, so he's showing the first guy something, and they're all back there like practicing their moves and all that kind of stuff. And
they're drinking
they were locked
it
in.
Up, man.
They were
and,
locked in.
And that tells me a lot about the relationship that he already has with that group. So that's why I was going to go with Chance. So it's a little bit different of a reason, but it's still the same conclusion.
Fellas, we're getting some phenomenal questions today. Like, our group came correct today in a big, big way. It's not just John A1 either. Detroit Hunter, I love this question. Who would you pick for a surprise fall emergence, the whole drastic summer improvement like we saw with Joe Alt last year?
Ooh,
did Joe surprise Alt fall emergence. Who is your pick? So I guess the premise is we didn't really know anything about Joe Alt and just kind of came out of nowhere and became a – you know, a starter and a pretty good football player. So Ryan, let's start. Actually, let's go with the seasoned vet, right? Let's go with Vince here. Vince, who is your pick? Who is your pick?
A surprise emergence. I'm going to go with, Merriweather.
Okay.
Because we don't know. I mean, we all think he's going to be really good. But we haven't seen anything because he's not even on campus yet. And so I think with a great summer, I think he could climb up the depth chart a little bit and he could be somebody that is in the mix.
Let me ask you this. Would that surprise you?
Because
Joe Alt was the guy we thought was going to sit for 2 years.
Well,
me saying the number one kid in the class is going to play as a freshman isn't a big surprise.
It wouldn't surprise me. But the other thing is I'm definitely a guy, like, I don't jump into the recruiting rankings like you guys do. Mm-hmm. I listen to what you have to say. I digest it, but I haven't seen him. So, I mean, it would be a little bit of a surprise to me also. And again, I realize it's a different coaching staff.
Yeah, it's not Brian Kelly.
I get that, but like,
Vince is still dealing with PK PTSD.
Vince
is still dealing with PK PTSD.
I absolutely am. I absolutely am. So to see a young guy out there at wide receiver would be refreshing. Okay. So
what say you, Ryan?
Does Alexander Ahrensberger count?
Yeah, I'd be surprised.
I think so.
If he becomes like a impact, like rotation player at end, three technique, absolutely.
I'll say that he cracks the rotation. He has like some cool stat line of like 7 tackles for loss and 4 sacks or something like that as a rotational
piece.
That'd
be huge. Yeah, that would be huge. I'd dig that quite a bit. I would like that quite a bit. I'm going Kane Barong. I think Kane Barong is gonna get healthy and kind of come into this fall and look at the fact that none of the other tight ends really stepped up and he's going to become a player.
Yeah,
that's a good one.
I think that's my pick. That's my pick. Surprise. Because, again, we're talking surprise, right? So I don't want to go with something obvious like Blake Fisher is going to become an All-American. Like, okay.
Well, right.
Like Jacob Lacy. We all knew once Jacob Lacy got healthy, he was going to be a player. You know, like, and Marish Lufau, that's not going to shock anyone.
Right.
And after all the talk we had about Junior Tuilamaka, I don't think that was.
See, he's the first one that came into my head. I was like, but that's not going to be a surprise. Exactly.
Like, hey, I can use Marish forever. I had that one like two years in advance. So I can use that forever.
Ryan, but then he got hurt and he ruined it for you. So, I mean, like, to me, I was thinking, what corner could I pick? But again, I don't think that would surprise anybody. And so right. that's why I was.
Well, I was thinking about Riley at corner for a second. I was like, that would be a little, like, he was a highly ranked kid. Yeah. I was like, he's a highly ranked kid, but like, I feel like he's not getting talked about much.
I think that'd be a surprise, because if it was Barnes or Mickey, I don't think anybody'd be shocked by that. But yeah, Philip Riley or Chance Tucker. Yeah. Was that guy?
Yeah.
I think those two would be a surprise, just because I think you mentioned it, Ryan. We're not talking about him a lot. John A1. Here we go, Vince. Here's a good one.
All right. At season start, where do you see the wide receiver room compared to college football field? Top 30, top 15, top 10.
I can't go with the latter two right now.
No, it's exactly my point. I agree with you. I'm comfortable with the top 30. I'm comfortable with top 30. I think there's talent there. But again,
just on potential alone, they're a top 25 caliber receiver.
They've got to show it in a game, though. If this offense is going to be what we think it can be, the wide receivers have got to play, and they've got to play well. They just do. I have confidence that will be the case, but I can't say top 15, top 10 right now. Yeah, I
can't go there yet.
Just can't. You know, big test game one, no doubt about that.
Right.
But I think if they can show out against Ohio State, which I think they have every opportunity to do so against that secondary, then all of a sudden people are going to be talking about this wide receiving core.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
I'm just still a believer with all of it. Beating Ohio State's great, but it's not a we've arrived moment.
No. Anyway. But I feel like then all of a sudden now they're going to be playing with confidence and people are going to notice, like, that kind of a thing. Right. Yeah.
I'm with you on that. I'm with you on that. Ryan, thoughts? Agree? Disagree?
Yeah, no, I didn't add anything in because I agree with you guys. I just need to see a sample size, right? Like, I mean, who's the leading receiver coming back? Avery Davis. It's like he's a good complimentary piece, but like, is there – it'd be awesome if Avery Davis was a good cog, not the dude. You know what I mean? Right. So I want to see development there.
Somebody's got to step up as a boundary, and it can't be Lorenzo Styles. That's my thing, is a full-time boundary. And until that happens, whether it's Deion Colsey, whether it's Jaden Thomas, whether it's Tobias Merriweather, whether it's Joe Wilkins, I got to see somebody. Because just in this offense, that's such an important position, or at least it has been. And it's not the leading receiver this year like it's been in the past, and Ryan and I have talked about this before, but it can't be like 20 catches from the boundary either. You have to have that guy that can win. And, you know, right now, I don't know if they have that guy. So I love the talent and potential. And I think they're going to produce well next year because you have the best tight end in the country, because you have backs and the system and RPOs. But just because you're putting up numbers doesn't necessarily mean you're an impactful unit. And that's something that obviously we got to see. Here's an interesting for you, Ryan. Who would have the better short shuttle, Jadarian Price or Christopher? I'm going to change this. Let's go. Who would have the better 40, which I think we would agree probably. Mm-hmm. And then who would have the better shuttle?
Yeah, I'd say Tyree obviously would have the faster 40. Price, I would think, would have the faster short shuttle. He seems like a little more of a shifty, kind of elusive type of dude. So I would imagine that he changes direction a little quicker.
Straight line speed, though, you can't go against Chris Tyree.
No, you cannot. We still need to have an Irish breakdown combine, by the way. Still waiting for it.
You better give me about a month's notice. Because I didn't start stretching that early.
I'm gonna have my age is gonna let me know right before that event that it's probably best that I sit out and not devalue myself and risk further injury.
It's gonna draft. It's gonna hurt your stock, man. You need to get your verified numbers, right?
Yeah, not happening.
This is John A1. This is a good question from John. He says Zeke Carell played well at center, as we said he would. Would I be consider still making the move with Patterson to right tackle? Wow, or right guard?
I'm definitely not moving him to tackle right now. No, I mean, the only way I'm moving Blake Fisher away from tackle is if some other tackle emerges is just like, wow,
we got to get him on the field.
And him or Joe Walt can't move, you know, aren't ideal suited for guard. That's the only way I'm moving Blake from tackle. And I've talked a lot about moving Blake from tackle. My thing is you be open to it if the circumstances arrives. Jarrett Patterson going to tackle is not that circumstance. And that doesn't mean he can't play it. I think he can play it very well. I'm just not taking a center and moving him to tackle unless I have to.
Right, exactly.
And that's why Barrett Jones, you know, went out there. It's why other guys have gone out there, because there was the need, not because necessarily it was your best position. Would I consider moving him to guard? I would say I'd probably be more willing to move him to left guard before I would move him to right guard. I know everyone's like ready to just be done with the Josh Lugg era. I would advise you against that. You know, I just let's see Josh develop and move. I think if anything, they move him to left guard before they move to center.
You took the words right out of my mouth. That's I I still believe in Josh, and I believe what he can do, and I am not going to be looking past Josh Lugg. And I think the biggest question mark right now on the offensive line is left guard. And doesn't necessarily say anything negative about the guys that have been playing there, but that's my biggest question mark right now. And if I'm moving Patterson anywhere, if that's on the table for discussion, it's to the left, not to the right. So I agree with you there.
Yep.
Here's a good one.
Notre Dame 2164. Is there any team this year that you guys would trade our running back room for? I've looked around and I don't think I would when looking at it as a whole.
I mean, we talked about this with Ohio State, right? And I said that if we were talking about, like, it was a few weeks ago, we were talking about like making the ultimate Ohio State Notre Dame team.
Oh, like
putting and they said, the if I'm just taking teams. A starter, with all due respect to the Notre Dame backs, it's not even a conversation. I'm taking Travion Henderson. He's a stud. But I said I would take 2-5 at Notre Dame over the 2-5 at Ohio State.
Right.
So if it's the entire room, you know, I'd probably still take Notre Dame's. But again, there, it's you still have to think about, is the difference between 1-1 so great that you have to be willing to take that 1-1? That's the thing, is like, do you sacrifice the depth for having a Travion Henderson, a Bijan Robinson? That, I mean, that at a position like running back, I think you have to think about that.
Absolutely.
Right. I do too. And if I, you know, on a grade, right, whose backfield has a better grade, you may take Notre Dame's. But if we're talking about practically putting a football team together, Ryan, I'm not taking Bijan Robinson off the field that much. I'm not taking Travion Henderson off the field that much. And that's something that those teams have that right now I don't think Notre Dame has.
Right. And I don't think anybody would disagree with the fact they don't have a bell cow back right now. I mean,
yeah, I don't think it needs to be a bell cow. I mean, it just means a proven, this guy's going to go into this game and give us a chance to have 100 yards. I think there's a lot of guys that have the potential to do that, but are there guys that are known commodities that are even in the same universe as a Bijan or a Travion Henderson? I don't think that's the case. So I don't think that's as easy. Like, if I'm just talking like on paper, who has the better depth chart, it's Notre Dame. And I've made that case before, but if we're talking about practically putting a football team on the field to go win a game, that's a different conversation for me.
Yeah. I think the only team that I could think of that is in the conversation is, you mentioned Texas already. I mean, they have Bijan, but they also have that Roschon Johnson kid, who's a good back as a second. And they have Keelan Robinson, who's the Alabama transfer, as their third stringer now. So like,
it's a good depth chart.
That's a good depth chart. But I mean, if we're talking 1-4, as a four, I think it would be very difficult to find four that are as good as what Notre Dame has right now.
Yeah, it'd be tough. I mean, really five. You add Jabron Payne into that conversation, who's a four-star kid. I mean, like, all five of those kids for me on the IB board graded out as four-star players coming out of high school. Here's another really good one from John A1, and then we're going to try to get some other people in here. They've all been great questions.
Yeah, exactly.
If Irish Breakdown had to choose between Jaden Osbury and Samuel Mpemba, who would you take?
Why do I have to pick? They're playing different positions in my ideal world. know, like,
if you look at him trying to steal my no.
Well, no, I mean, but they're just scholarship. They're left. So different, though. Yeah. They're just so different. They're not like, see, like, I mean, John, in a perfect world, like, and Pemba's like a Will Viper to me, right? And Osbury would be a Rover Viper. You know what I mean? So Rover, like, they're just Will, a little a Rover Will. I'm sorry, not a Viper. Yeah, Rover Will. So like, they're just such different players. It's tough for me.
I'd go Osbury simply because as of right now, I do think they need a third linebacker in this class because Josh Burnham moved to Viper. Like, before, I was like, I'm okay with only two linebackers. Like, I would like a third, but I'm okay with only two because you just signed four. But they've already moved Josh Burnham to Viper, and you had one guy on the roster from the year before, none from the year before that. So that's six linebackers in 3 years. That's not ideal. Mm-hmm. Right? What's up, Ryan?
I'm just going to say I'm changing my answer. There's another layer that got into this conversation. Yeah. Jaden Osbury is right from the Bayou, so I'm taking him out of LSU's backyard. That's an easy answer.
He's spiteful with it. I love that. There's nothing wrong with that, Ryan.
Is he really?
He goes to
University Lab. His campus is, his high school is, I believe, on LSU's campus.
Wow.
Isn't his dad or something on the LSU staff or works for the school or something? Yeah.
So that would be
still not LSU.
Just practically speaking, I think they need a third linebacker, and I'm confident Jaden Osbury stays a linebacker. I'm not confident that Samuel Mpemba doesn't follow Josh Burnham right down to defensive end. And I think he could end up being a big end because I think he could be 265 in time and be able to play kind of both of those. So I'm going – and I just think Jaden Osbury is a – Samuel Mpemba, you're betting on the upside.
Yeah.
He's not an elite football player right now. He's an elite talent.
It's like the Jaden NFL draft right now.
Jaden Osbury is the exact opposite. He's not the elite – intangibles guy, not intangibles, measurables guy. He's not 6'3", he's not 230, but that kid's he's one of the three best linebackers in the country right now as far as just pop on the film. This kid makes a ton of plays. This kid's got instincts. This kid can run. There are other guys like Anthony Hill and Darren Gallette and Samuel Mpemba and guys like that who have they're the 6'3s, they're the 225s, they're the kid from Kentucky that got drafted last year. You take that kid, and I'm gonna take the better football player in Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah. That's how I see it. And Jaden Osbury is one of my favorite players in this class. I mean, he's just a phenomenal foot. You know who he is? He could be Notre Dame's Jonathan Vilma. That's how I view him. Like, he's not gonna blow you away. Like, Jonathan Vilma wasn't an elite athlete. He was a good athlete, but he wasn't like an elite athlete. He was small. But the guy was a super smart and a phenomenal football player. And he was athletic. He just wasn't, you know. But I'll take a guy like that over the kid from Kentucky today of the week. And who didn't see that coming, right? I mean, anyone that actually watches film and still cares about film over analytics looked at that and was like, that's going to be stupid. Like, that's going to be a dumb move.
But he had production, and he's 6'4", and he's fast. Okay, cool.
So did Andy Katzenmoyer. So
that's a good name. Wow. Good pull there. Big cow. Wow. Nice.
Speaking of guys with no mind for the game.
Pull that out of nowhere.
And see, we've kind of got all the Andy Katzenmoyer tidbits. We said we use the word meatwad in this show. You know, guys.
He had the nice role too, right? Yeah. Going on.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No doubt. No doubt. No doubt. Here we go.
Jordan Schreiber says, did Ryan Barnes lay guys out all the time in high school too? Man, he hits hard. I can only imagine what he'll do to non-teammates.
Yeah, he wasn't like that. No, he was a good tackler in high school, but he wasn't laying the wood. And I don't think that's his game. I just think he had some opportunities that kind of came up where he had some clear shots come hit people. He's always been a tough kid, but he's not gonna go out there every Saturday and lay like four or five, like lay you out type of hits.
Right.
It's just kind of the game kind of brought it to that point. At least that's my take on it. He's not this like the second coming of Sean Taylor, right? Like I don't see that. And I don't see that. And that's just my two cents. Ryan, this guy is becoming your Dante Moore for me. All right, Shamrock Sean, thank you for the question, Sean. Where do we stand with Samson Okolola, and what is the dream finish? The 2023 offensive lineman class. I think that second part is I'm really interested to see your answer to that one.
Yeah. I mean, for the first one, for Samson, I put an update on the board a couple days ago. It's basically been a back and forth, right? I constantly hit him up. Hey, man, when are you visiting? How's everything going? Type of conversation. He told me this last time that he is, because I flat out said, because he had not set up a visit again for like the last four times I'm talking to him. And he said that, oh, yeah, I'm interested in Notre Dame, that we talk every so often. I'm just like, okay, well, he doesn't have interest. I mean, let's call it what it is, right? Like, we can read between the lines. Maybe he'll get there for an official, but, like, he hasn't. And he already made a Midwest trip, went out to Michigan State, and he decided not to include Notre Dame in those travels. So I would – if you have high hopes for Samson Okolola, I would say just temper your expectations on that one a good bit, not even a little bit, a good bit. So dream finish for 2023 offensive line class. They already have Sam Pendleton committed, who just committed from North Carolina. I would say for me, five-man class, I want Pendleton, Freeling, Jagasaw, by the way.
Forgot to bring that up.
Oh, you had to do it, didn't you, Ryan?
Jagasaw. Well, I hadn't talked about him, Vince. I mean, I had to. Charles Jagasaw, who we were misinformed that it was.
Yes, people wrong. In the chat like, oh, I think it's wrong because so-and-so somewhere else said it's something else. So we're like doing it. I think it's Jagusa. And I'm like, all right, cool. We'll go Jagusa. It's freaking Jagasaw. The kid said it in the video. Who was it? Was it Nick Baker? My guy, no. Nick Baker, he's the one that sent me because I tweeted.
Oh, yeah, he tagged me in it. He tagged me.
Sometimes when I listen to Tom's things, that's the godfather, man. And he puts something out about one of Notre Dame players, I'm retweeting it, you know, because then it's like, so, yeah, my guy Nick Baker put it on there. And he's like, he DM'd, he sent me a DM and he was like, he sent me and he goes, maybe you were right with the pronunciation. So it's, and he says his name. He's like, my name's Charles Jagasaw. And I was fired up, dude. I was so ready to jump. I'm like, we're doing a special show right now. More fun. All you people told me not to pronounce the name right.
You have no idea how much I've been just walked around the house and I've said Jagusa because it just does not roll off the tongue, man.
Yes.
It doesn't roll off the tongue. Jagasaw rolls off the tongue.
Jagasaw runs off the tongue. So yes. Whoever was saying that, I think Tommy Guns might have been one of them. Tommy, next time I see you, there's going to be a misunderstanding. There's going to be some furniture moving in this thing. All right. So it is Charles Jagusa. So anyway, back to your dream class. I apologize. We need to restart your dream class over again because we're going to be fired up. Jagusa.
Sam Pendleton.
I don't know.
Why are you saying Jagusa still? Sam Pendleton is committed already. Ideally, Monroe Freeling, true left tackle. Charles Jagasaw, who is a right tackle, and I think he could also play off inside at offensive guard. Sullivan Absher, who also could play tackle, but I also think that he could also be a really good guard inside. And my last guy, Brian, this is going to be a surprise for you, I think it's going to be a little one. Elijah Page. I like Elijah Page, man. So, I take Elijah Page. I would.
So you went with five, right? I went with
five, yep.
Jagusa. Jagasaw, son of a biscuit.
Absher,
Pendleton, and Page. That's your five?
That's it.
Yeah. If I'm going to say dream finish, like dream finish, I have to go with Okunlola because he's the best tackle in the class, right? If we're going to talk realistic dream finish, we're on the same page. I like Elijah Page a lot. He's probably got the lowest floor of the guys we talked about, but he's got a really high ceiling. I like him a lot. And I think he's probably – him and Monroe Freeling, to me, are the most pure offensive tackles. Like, you and I have a little bit of a disagreement on Charles Jagasaw. In that, I got to think about it now, like Jagasaw, in that we both think he can play tackle, but you like him better guard. I kind of like him better right tackle. So, you know, you'd have four guys that could get it that are this. That's a Harry Hiestand class. One interior player, four tackles with at least two of them that could play inside. Like that would be a perfect Harry Hiestand class. So, yes, Ryan, if we're talking realistic, the ideal realistic finish as of right now, I think you're spot on. And I don't know if there's going to be a better line class in the country than that. Right.
Yeah.
There.
So someone commented on Elijah Page in the chat earlier. I forgot to start, but I really like that kid, man. He's a really nice athlete and he's technically pretty sound. I know he has to get stronger. There's no doubt, but you could convince me that he's a left tackle down the road. Like I think that he's that type of athletic profile. So I'm all for loading up on those offensive tackle types and then figuring it out. Like, because again, I think Jagasaw, Pendleton, and Sullivan Absher, they could all end up inside potentially. Like it could happen. But I think Elijah Pace is a true tackle. Like that kid's feet and that kid's technique is very good for his age. So I like him a ton.
Here's a good one up here. These are always fun. I love questions like this. Daniel Zolaki with a super chat. Thank you for that, Daniel. If you were an elite recruit other than Notre Dame, which schools would you take an official? So let's say Notre Dame's getting one, right? We would all take to Notre Dame. So who are your other four official visits?
I would go to Florida Gators. I would go to USC just to see what it's like.
Dude, because go to UCLA.
Okay, fine. UCLA, LA. I've never been to LA. I just want to go to LA.
You don't want to be involved in a gang shooting. So you don't want to go to USC. You want to go to the nice part.
See, I don't know anything about LA. So there you go. So
you're helping me out. That's why I need your advisor. I'm your agent.
You help me out. I would go to Oregon just to see what all the fuss is about with the facilities. I think that would be fun. And then I'd want to go to an East Coast school. Honestly, I might just go to Boston College. I love Boston. I think I might that's weird. I get it. But I would want to go to an East Coast school. I just hit like all over the country. So that would be my five.
Brian, what say you?
Five other than Notre Dame or Notre Dame is included?
Notre Dame's one. What are your other four?
I would like to go to University of Texas. Check out Austin. That sounds like a good time. I would like to go to – I would probably go to the University of Florida. Check out Gainesville.
It's a really cool place.
Yeah. I got an off the wall one. I'm at number three. I would like to check out Coastal Carolina.
Really?
Myrtle Beach. Yeah. Want to go down there. I heard it's incredible nightlife too. So yeah, I'll go check that out. Okay. And then number four, I might go with Oregon, kind of like with Vince said. I want to see the facilities and everything. And I heard Oregon's a beautiful
part of the country. I mean, yeah, like a lot of, if you're someone who enjoys like mountains and hiking and forest, really cool stuff like that, then Oregon's a place for you.
Yeah. If I had to shuffle out Coastal Carolina, then I would go to like North Carolina or something. Cause I really do like that area, North Carolina as well. So somewhere in the Carolinas would be the final one.
Yeah. Pretty much all mine have gotten hit so far. UCLA would be mine. I've heard UCLA is a gorgeous campus. And actually, it's the only campus I haven't been to of the ones I would take an official. See, I've taken unofficial visits to a lot of these. I would now want to take officials, unofficial meaning my job. Not, I didn't take unofficial when I was being recruited. I didn't take unofficial visits there. NC State's the only one I did like that. Texas would be one because Austin's awesome. As far as at least food and having fun and all that. Florida, because Gainesville, I love Gainesville. It's a really cool place to hang out. Not somewhere I'd want to necessarily live, but a cool place to visit. And then North Carolina, because Chapel Hill has one of the most beautiful campuses in the country. And the Carolinas, you know, good weather and all that kind of stuff. So that would probably be my four. I'm not going to lie. I've always kind of wanted to be to, and this is sort of like I'd want to try it out. I've always wanted to go to Norman just to see what Norman, Oklahoma was like, see, you know, kind of, you know, tradition and all that, but I'm not sure if they would necessarily get on my list.
They popped in my head. They popped in my head.
Yeah. So, I mean, Oregon was an option maybe, but I mean, I've been out there and there's no way in heck I would ever live in Oregon. So it's like, why waste my time? I could see myself living in LA. I would probably not. I mean, I'm pretty anti-California when it comes to living. Florida, you know, obviously somewhere. I thought about Miami, but I've heard their campus isn't great and they don't even have their own stadium. So I wouldn't go there. Then Tallahassee's, you know, hard pass. So I'd go to Gainesville. That'd be the one I'd go to. And then North Carolina. So that's what I guess. I love questions like that. I think those are so fun.
You wouldn't go to Michigan? Man.
Been there, done that. Hard pass. All right. Irish for life. A question. Ryan, this is for you. What do you think about the quarterback Pittsburgh drafted from Pittsburgh?
He was
not on our earlier show.
Yeah. So, yeah. Irish for life. If you want a little more of a longer answer on this one, you can go back to our previous video on the channel. We did like a little NFL draft recap from day one. I'll say this. I think it's a massive reach. I'll be very honest. I had a third round grade on him. And I mean, I think that there's a really solid floor to being a really good backup and being like one of those guys that maybe develops into a solid starter. Think of your Matt Castles of the world. Like that's kind of like people that like pop in my mind. Somebody said that they have upsides of like Derek Carr. I don't quite see that. I see more like Teddy Bridgewater, which is like fine, you know, but like Teddy Bridgewater is never a guy that you're just consistently like, yes, that's my starting quarterback for the foreseeable future. Like that's how I just kind of think of Kenny. Cause it's just solid arm, good athletes, not great athletes. Everything's just solid. Nothing's great for me. So I think that he's a replaceable starter at best at the next level, which on day two, I'm good with. But for the 20th overall selection, no, not that I'm not there with him.
You know, we somewhat disagree on the level of how we view Kenny Pickett. I like him a little bit more than you, but we're on the same page as far as what his projection is. He's not a first-round draft pick at quarterback. Now, if you could have got him in round two, I'm like, you know what? You take a chance, right? You take a chance on him, and, you know, maybe he was a late bloomer, right? And he's ready to go be that guy. That happens. But I'm not taking that chance at 20. I get why Pittsburgh did it. I don't even necessarily hammer him for it. I didn't love it. You know, I think he's a good player. He was a good college player that played against really crappy teams. And I just, you know, it took him a while to go. He's an older kid. I don't.
Yeah. Well, that's the other layer is he's 24. And I actually know that his personal trainer, he actually has had a huge growth spurt. The guy told me that he was only like 5'11" his junior year in high school or something like that. And he sprouted up to like 6'1" as a senior and he's grown like 2 more inches since he's been in college. So it's always possibly develops a little further, but I mean, he's 24 years old. So at some point that's not going to be a tangible thing anymore. So,
yep. Here we go. Got one from Peter Pumpkin Eater. Brian, he goes, I know you are a Built Bar sommelier. Any recommendation on what flavor I should buy? First of all, use the promo code below. because you can get 10% off your whole order. I'll tell you the ones I like. As far as the puffs, I like the banana cream pie. That's a good one. Cherry Barcia is definitely in my top five. Coconut almond's pretty good if you like that kind of thing. Some of the ones that I like that they don't have, salted caramel. My mom really likes a salted caramel. I haven't had it yet. I have recently bought caramel brownie, which they only have sometimes. If they have Rocky Road, if they have cookie dough, or if they had caramel brownie, they only sell them at times until limited supplies last. Scoop those up when you get a chance. But as far as what they have right now, the banana cream puff cream, which is a banana cream pie puff, is really good. I would go cherry barcia. I would go coconut almond. I don't like raspberries, so I didn't like the raspberry a whole lot, but my wife liked it because she likes raspberry. That's pretty good. And then the salted caramel, those would be the ones that I would recommend. All right. Christian Porter, hypothetical. If Joe Walton, Blake Fisher were able to go into the draft this year, do you think they would be drafted and where?
Do I think they would be drafted?
Absolutely.
Yes.
Yes.
Where? That's a very difficult question to say. Like, it's just, yeah, they're not draft eligible, so they're not developed to that level, right?
They don't have film. They don't have film.
Well, they don't have film as well.
Game and a half.
Right.
I think Joe would go ahead of Blake just because there's more film.
Absolutely. Yeah, I would agree with that. I would agree with that.
Now, I will say this. You know, Blake had to go against Jermaine Johnson for half. Thought he held his own well in that first half. And he did pretty well against Texas or Oklahoma State's pass rush, you know, but he's got a game and a half of film. Mm-hmm. So they would, to me, be day three guys right now. I actually think that's not an insult. That's actually, I think, something that's impressive. There aren't a lot of freshman offensive linemen that you could say if they were going to the draft right now would get drafted. Sure. But they would be huge projects. Because in the NFL, that's the one position, in my opinion, I'd say quarterback might be another one. Where, you know, Kenny Pickett being older doesn't hurt him from a draft projection standpoint because the NFL teams are fine. Ours is, I just don't know how much better he's going to get because he's older is where we're coming from. But the age is, that's fine. Offensive line is another one because that's a position where you kind of have a little bit longer lifespan. Like receivers, like once you hit 30, you lose a step and you're just, you know, a lot of those guys just can't play anymore. You know, running backs that way. Corners kind of that way for a lot of guys. I mean, Richard Sherman went from great, 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 and bam, you know, just like it. Darrell Revis is another one that I thought just like his game just like just took a big jump because it's such a position that requires a level of top level athleticism. I think that's why you see D linemen play longer in their careers. You don't see Andrew Whitworth's at corner, right? I mean, because it's not as determined by athleticism. So when you lose a step, you can make up for it in technique and savviness and all that. So I don't, and so the opposite is true, is the lack of experience is something that would be a big negative, which is why you'd see those guys fall. So here it's a good question because I never would have thought of that, Christian. So I like the question. Jordan Schreiber says, so do you think Notre Dame is going to continue the momentum and have an even better recruiting class in 2024?
Yes to both. I mean, why would it stop, right? Like this is – I think of it as this is a first step for Marcus Freeman as a head coach, and I don't see any reason why that momentum would get stalled, right? I mean, obviously, if he doesn't have on-field success, but like if we're assuming that things are going pretty well, I don't think that it's just going to stop. Like this is just the starting point, so I don't see any reason why the momentum would get stalled in that way.
So I'm gonna. So to me, I think they can continue the momentum doesn't equal the class is even better than this year's class. I don't think that means like if you're number one this year and you're number three next year, that doesn't mean they've lost all the momentum, right? Like it's about landing elite classes. And the reason I would tend to lean towards, I'm not yes on the first answer. Will they continue the momentum? Yes. Will it be even better in 24? I'm going to probably lean towards no, simply because the 23 class, and we've talked about this, it is a unique year in that there's so many elite Northern players. You know, there aren't I don't know if there's a Rodney Gallagher in the North next year. I don't know if there's going to be three four-star kids from Massachusetts next year that Notre Dame can have a chance to get, right? Like, I don't know if there's going to be another five-star caliber lineman in Illinois, right? Or a top 50 linebacker from an hour and a half from Notre Dame's campus, right? I don't know if there's, well, there is another good quarterback from Detroit or the Michigan area next year, but you get what I'm saying? So, like, I just don't know if I can say it's going to be better next year, but it's the momentum can continue even if next year's class isn't quite as good as the 23 class is kind of where I'm coming from on that. But it also wouldn't surprise me if next year's better. Because if they go out and have the success on the field this year, Ryan, then you don't necessarily need to rely on the heavy Northern influence like you are now if the product is legit. You know, so, I mean, if Marcus Freeman takes his team to the playoff, you know, which obviously would be a great scenario, then good luck beating Notre Dame on the recruiting trail next year. I mean, that's the only thing all these teams are hoping for is, man, I hope Notre Dame. Like, you're seeing Michigan fans rooting for Ohio State to beat Notre Dame. I have seen it with my own eyes. I've seen multiple Michigan fans say, man, I hope Ohio State kills Notre Dame next year. That's how afraid the Michigan fans are of Notre Dame on the recruiting trail. They're hoping that their arch nemesis wins against Notre Dame. Like, that doesn't happen very often, Ryan, to see that.
Does not.
Coach Koch, does Isaiah Pryor get a shot somewhere, perhaps the USFL? Could that happen for Asmar and Dante Fawn as well? Do you see a future with Notre Dame players and the other pro leagues?
Right now is as good as it's ever been as far as opportunities to play football outside of the NFL. You have the USFL, which you mentioned. The XFL is also coming back. And, of course, there's the CFL. And there's also other leagues overseas. Like, there's the ELF, which is a European football league as well. So there's a lot of opportunities. Isaiah Pryor is a 220-pound player who tested pretty well and has a pedigree as a recruit. And he's played at two very good programs and played decent football at two programs. So, yes, I think he'll get a shot. He'll get a shot. USFL makes a ton of sense. XFL, if not, maybe he's a CFL guy. I'm not sure exactly. The thing about CFL is you have to be – I mean, guys have to be pretty dedicated to go and play up in Canada, right? Like, that's not for everybody. It's really not. So, I think Pryor definitely is talented enough to find an alternative league. Dante and Asmar obviously are as well. You know, I think that both of them are probably holding out for NFL, which I don't blame them. Like, that's the sure. – That's the main spot that you want to get to, but there's leagues all over the place now, and they are definitely good enough players to play professional football in some capacity.
Agree. Notre Dame 2164. I don't want to get soppy here, but I wanted to thank you guys for all the work you do. You are most welcome. Not just Notre Dame football, but also for creating this family that people can depend on. You guys helped me get through my day. I'll be honest with you. That means more to me than you. If you were to say, hey, you guys are great at breaking down film, you guys are the best analysts, no more. I mean, that right there ultimately is at the heart of, and Ryan can attest this to you, something I talked to him about when we're going through the hiring process. That right there was the one thing that I wanted Irish Breakdown to be about. Yes, we're going to give you great analysis, and I hired Ryan to do a job to cover recruiting and to provide analysis and all those type of things. But there was always the thought of, you're part of a family now. And Ryan will tell you that. I mean, you're part of a community now. It's not just a job. It's something you got to be part of, which is, you don't have to be a Notre Dame fan to do this job, but I think it helps because of that sense of community. So, man, I tell you, I thank you a lot that you say that, because that's the stuff that makes the long days worth it. That's the stuff that makes, you know, whether for Ryan, it's not being able to spend as much time with his wife and daughter, and for me and my wife and the things that we want to do because of that, because we know that's what we're building. And I really appreciate you sharing that very much. Jordan also asked, combine the receivers of 21, 22, and 23, the realistic targets in 23. What order do you rank all the receivers coming out of high school? I know the juniors get gypped, but act like they play their senior season. So 21, we'd go Styles, right? Let's go Colsey and then Jaden Thomas. And then 22, Merriweather. So for 23, we're not going to do Carnell. So let's go Braylon James. Mm-hmm. Let's just talk about that ideal receiver class we did earlier, Ryan. Let's go James. Let's go Gallagher. Let's go Greathouse. And let's go Hanifin.
Sure.
Okay. And then that's one heck of a freaking receiving core. Just wrote all those names down and I'm like, holy moly. I don't know where they're going to be. My number one is easy. It's Tobias Merriweather. That's still my number one. I think Tobias, he's the highest great ranked receiver I've had in a while. I mean, he was a top 50 guy for me. I'm very, very high on him. Who would be your number one, Ryan?
I'd probably say Merriweather as well. It's close. I'm a big Rodney Gallagher fan. I would probably defer though, and Rodney would probably be my number two.
Okay. That's an interesting one. So what I'm doing is I'm actually – the way I'm going to try to do this, Jordan, is I'm going to go from where I had all these guys as juniors. That's the only way I think I can do it fairly. So I can't do it, act like they played their senior year, because I can't assume what I don't know. What I do know, however, is I saw all these guys as juniors. So that's where I'm going to go with it. And I think like Lorenzo Styles, I liked as a junior, he got a lot better as a senior. Well, if Rodney Gallagher makes that same kind of jump, right? I mean, so that's the thing for me. So going off of them as juniors, I probably go Braylon James is my number two. And I think some of this, Ryan, comes down to preference. There's a style of receiver I like, and I've said this, my bias at receiver, and you're going to see it in my list, I like tall, fast guys that can win contested catches. As a quarterback, if you get any type of receiver, that's the one I want, and that's my bias. And I'm not going to lie about that. And you said Gallagher's your number two?
Yep, Gallagher would be number two. I never watched Lorenzo Styles as a junior. I only remember his senior highlights. Yeah. So he would be my number three, just based upon that.
That's fair. I'm going Gallagher as my three. Okay. That's going to be my three. Be honest, the 2021, both of the 2020 receivers to me made big jumps as seniors. Especially Lorenzo. I didn't have him as a top 100 player coming out as a junior. So right now I have other guys ahead of them. This is a tough one. I don't know if I can do that. I mean, I have to really look at the grades and stuff, because I'm like, man, but what about Hanifin? And I mean, Jaden Thomas would be at the bottom of my list, which says something, because he had a 4-star grade for me coming out of high school. Mm-hmm. My number four, Ryan, I'd probably go with I'd probably go with Deon Colsey, just because of the upside. I mean, the upside was always there. I mean, you could see it. He was underdeveloped and all that, but the upside was enormous for him.
Okay.
And I'm an upside guy.
My next guy would be my boy, Jaden Greathouse. Yep.
He's next for me. He's my five. Just because he's so advanced.
That works, because Colsey would be my next on the list. So yeah.
Styles is my next one. But again, that's junior. As a junior, I had Deon Colsey ranked ahead of Styles. As seniors, it flipped. So again, I'm going off of so keep that in mind. I'm going off of where Lorenzo was as a junior. I thought he made a big jump as a senior, and he was a much better prospect. I can't believe I got Ronan Hanifin at number seven. That's insane. And then Jaden Thomas, eight. That's my group. That's a one heck of a receiving group. I mean, a lot of it is because two of my top three are from this class, in Braylon James and Rodney Gallagher. Have Braylon? Where did you have you had him real low, didn't you?
I had him right below Deon.
Okay.
So Deon, Ronan, and then Jaden.
Okay.
I like Braylon. I just, all tools though right now. Yep. Some projection. So.
Yep. Interesting. Good question, Jordan. Very good question. Hulk Strongest always likes to, guys always like to get me with this. Like once a month, somebody has to hurt my heart like this. Could you imagine if Notre Dame came, if Randy Moss came to Notre Dame? Yeah, I can imagine it, because I did it for several months. I imagined it a lot for several months. I'm thinking like Ron Paulus, two Heismans, and he gets to throw to Randy Moss and Derek Mays, and this is going to be wonderful. And James Jackson's the running back, and it didn't work out. Did you know that James Jackson also signed with that class as a running back? The kid that went to Miami.
I think you told me that before. Yeah. Would have been pretty good, right?
Oh, decent. Man. And thank you for the super chat, Hulk Strongest. We appreciate that very, very much. Ian Johnson, with how many first rounders were in Georgia's 2021 defense? Who wins? He stands primo line or Georgia's 2021 D line? 17, unless you think a better. I think 15 was better than 17.
Yeah. I mean, let's go with 15 then. Let's go 15 first 21. That's tough.
I think it needs more context.
Yeah.
Because I think what hurt the Notre Dame offensive line in 2017 against a really good Georgia line that year was Georgia just loaded the box and they dared Notre Dame to beat them throwing the football. And that's why another reason I kind of like 15, because if you try to do that against Notre Dame in 2015, unless you're doing it in a rainy situation like Clemson, you're going to get shredded, because they had so many athletes.
Right.
So, if everything was equal from a coaching and a strength condition, so if I could take the 2015 line with current offensive coaching staff and Matt Bayless in the 2015 roster, I should say, with the current staff, I'd like to see that battle. I'd like to see that battle. I would.
Man, it's tough, man. That's because
you had Trayvon. Those guys were all great players, but Notre Dame had two top 10 picks at tackle.
Yeah.
And I would argue 15 is still Mike McGlinchey's best year. I mean, he was phenomenal in 15 playing right tackle. You had a top 10 pick, and Ronnie Stanley was an All-American that year. Quentin Nelson was a monster, and he was physically big enough to hold up against those big guys inside of Georgia. That's a key.
Jordan Davis.
A really important thing. And then you had Steve Elmer at right guard, who was a bigger kid, and then Nick Martin was a really good player at center. You know,
I mean, four out of five are really good. I know Elmer was a good player before he stepped, obviously, away from football. But that's just like kind of where I'm like getting hung up for a second, because it's like he's going to be one on one with a Jalen Carter or a Devontae Wyatt in this scenario. Because we're kind of, I feel like we're kind of talking more on like this is like a one on one battle, right? Like you're going to kind of find your spots. That's obviously where they would have a clear advantage is like if they got Jalen Carter, for instance, against him, it's like that kid's a freak, you know? So,
well, here'd be an interesting way of putting it. So, like, if they were going to practice and it was just a one-on-one rep, I think Notre Dame wins at left tackle. I think Notre Dame wins at left guard. I'd call draw at right tackle. And I think Georgia wins at center in the center and right guard matchup. Nick Martin was a good player, but in a one-on-one matchup
against Davis,
Jordan Davis whips him. I mean, right? It just so taking your angle to it, Ryan. Like, let's take it away from a game situation and just line them up against each other.
Yeah,
I actually think that that's where maybe the 2017 line in that scenario might be the better option, because I think Alex Barr's healthy would have a better shot at matching up against those guys than Steve Elmer would.
I agree with you.
That's my take on that, but I still take the 15 line. I think that was Notre Dame's best line. I do. Good, really good questions today, everybody. I'm loving it so far. Jordan Schreiber, I'm blown away by how many top 100 recruits are committed already, and how many the Irish are in the game for. What is the total top 10 total top 100 composite Notre Dame ends up with this year?
I mean, we're doing it in an ideal world, right? Or are we doing it in a realistic world?
Well, I think just realistically, like guys, we think they have a shot to get. Because I actually did the math on this the other day for. Not the math, but I went and looked through this the other day on because somebody was talking about, oh, they're not going to finish in the top five because all these other teams are going to finish with whatever. And again, it's BK PTSD. That's my new phrase. I'm going to get a shirt. I'm not going to really do that, but I'm going to get – I feel like getting a shirt made that just says hashtag BK PTSD.
That's fun.
There's so many Notre Dame fans with BK PTSD. They're just like – because they're waiting on the – and I have it sometimes. You know, it's like, oh, I'm waiting on something bad to happen, because that's just what always happened. So we go.
Yeah. Dante Moore, quarterback, nobody at running back. Braylon James already committed. Rodney Gallagher, Jaden Greathouse count. Yes.
I believe he's just outside the top 100.
Okay. So we'll take him off then. So we're up to three. Offensive line. Nice.
I told you I did this.
Offensive line, Monroe Freeling.
Yep.
Charles Jagasaw.
He's at 71.
So another offensive lineman. Asher's not top 100, right?
Because one of those services has him like not in the top 100, like 200-300, which is absurd.
Yeah.
Here's the nine that I think, Brian.
You have nine? Okay.
There's five commits. Keon Keeley, Drake Bowen, Peyton Bowen, Braylon James, Brendan Vernon. The lowest is 85. So let's assume they stay in the top 100, which they should. Then you have Dante Moore at six. This is off the composite list. Jason Moore at 50. Charles Jagasaw at 71, Monroe Freeling at 80. That's nine. Rodney Gallagher's 104, and Jaden Greathouse is 110. Both of those guys have a shot to jump into the top 100, in my opinion. So, I mean, you could see if just one of those two guys does that, then that's where you are. That does not include Jaden Osbury. That does not include Samuel Mpemba. That does not include Caleb Downs. Three top 100 guys that Notre Dame has. Christian Gray is just outside the top 100 as well. So even if they don't pull off a single upset, and I think you would argue with me putting Jaden Osbury in the upset category. I think you would, correct? You think they have a better – it wouldn't be an upset in your opinion if they got Jaden Osbury. Would you agree with that?
I think they're in a better situation than people think they are, yeah.
So if they got those nine, because I think all those nine I listed, Dante Moore, Jason Moore, Charles Jagasaw and Monroe Freeling, none of – we wouldn't be sure. I think – I would argue Notre Dame leads for all four of those guys. Do you agree with that? So that's nine right there. That's a lot.
It is a lot. That's a lot. That's not even counting, like, the other guys are, like, kind of – like, I mean, they're all top 250 kids. Right. Like, it's, like, crazy. Right. Yeah.
I think last year's Georgia class had 11, and last year's Ohio State class had 7.
Okay.
I mean, so Notre Dame's at 9. They would only need, like, one of those guys to jump in. Like, Gallagher jumps in, and they land Jaden Osbury or Samuel Mpemba. They land one of those two, and they're right there where Georgia was last year.
Well, if Notre Dame's able to land Gallagher or Greathouse, they need to assume that status before they commit to Notre Dame.
They need to jump way into the top 100 because they will fall. So, and that's the that's the other rub, though, right? Ryan is like a lot of the kids at Bama and Georgia got were top 100 guys. They got a decent chunk of them later in the process as those guys moved up the rankings because it's a better storyline and you get more clicks when a kid is uncommitted than when a kid commits super early. Just the reality of it.